You're listening to another episode of Tap Outs and Touchdowns.
Bill. That's right, everybody. It's another football episode of Tap Outs and Touchdowns. A little bit of technical difficulties here to start the show. Bill, what's going on, bud?
Technical guy. He's terrible. Our technical guy is terrible. It's awful.
What's happening, Ryan? You should know this by now that, like, you are the tech-savvy guy on this podcast. And somehow I'm the one that's brought in to, like, do all this, lead-ins and lead-outs and stuff like that. So, welcome, everybody, to another football show. A lot to get to today because we have seen come and go the week one of the UFL season. I know there was a lot of stuff going on last weekend between the men's NCAA tournament and the women's NCAA tournament. And so without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and start Homer's Corner this week because my Homer's Corner starts with none other than the Final Four. That's right. This weekend will be the men's and women's Final Four. It's sort of a humble brag here. I do a March Madness pool every year. And this year I happened to select three of the Final Four men's teams, that being, UConn, Alabama, Purdue, and I missed NC State, but in my pool, if Purdue either wins the championship or UConn loses, your guy's going to go home a relatively rich man. So I'm pretty excited about that. Shout out to Rachel Barry and Zach Pierce, who both are right there with me. They've got the same point total, the same teams winning. So it's going to come down to the tiebreaker one way or the other for them. On the women's side, I want to shout out my Lady Gamecocks, which is why I'm repping the Gamecock sweater tonight, hoodie tonight. The Lady Gamecocks, the number one overall seed, also made the Final Four, going up against NC State in their Final Four matchup. On the other side, UConn was able to knock off Southern Cal, and Iowa was thankfully able to down LSU.
Thank you, Iowa. I think
a lot of us are extremely happy to see Kim Mulkey out of the tournament. Angel Reese also, declared for the WNBA draft earlier today.
I'm going to miss her.
Oh, man. It's so upsetting here. So a really fun weekend of basketball. I don't know when the last time it's happened, but multiple schools, if you paid attention, NC State and UConn both have both their women's and men's team in the Final Four at the same time. Pretty cool. No, I do not have Bali Poly in the chat. I do not have the Gamecock jersey on under the hoodie that I wore in the Cat Cave. That's actually over on the couch here. If you guys listen to my Carolina Panthers show, I went into a lot of detail about Jadeveon Clowney signing with the Panthers. Also want to remind everybody who's watching the show live with us on Facebook.com/tapoutsandtouchdowns, on YouTube or on X, to enter a comment like Bali Poly did and join the conversation as we go through this here football show. So thanks for watching live with us. Bill, your Homer's Corner goes a different direction than the college basketball March Madness tournament. You want to talk about Chris Sims here for a second.
Yeah, I'm tired of him. I'm just done with this guy. Who gives this guy a microphone? He's on Pro Football Talk with Mike Florio. And I mean, I know he spends his life watching sports, right? So he said the other day that what the UFL is missing is star power. That he can't even watch it because there are no stars in the UFL. Now, this man is on Pro Football Talk, which means that his job is to talk about football, and he can't watch football. I'm done with him. I have already hated on Chris Sims on the show. He talked about how bad Tua Tagovailoa was going to be last season. He was completely wrong. Tua Tagovailoa led the NFL in passing yardage last season. And Chris Sims now telling us that he can't watch the UFL because there's no star power, and he's not going to watch football for a Pro Football Talk. Just done with the guy. Done with the guy. Chris Sims should be taken off of TV and beaten, flogged, whatever. I don't care. Just like, let's be done with him. I'm done with him. Like, it's terrible.
Beaten and flogged. We're not condoning that here on the show. Flogged. We would never.
No, I'm just telling you. Let's just get him off. He's just terrible. I can't even watch it. It's bad.
Zach in the chat, hope everyone's doing okay. I hope you're doing okay, man. If UConn wins the tournament, then it's going to come down to points totals with between him and Rachel. So shout out to Zach, former guest of the show, Zach Attack. Made picks with us last year in NFL Talk on here, the show. So Bill, before we get to UFL Talk, there are a couple things that took place in the other world of football. Let's start in the NFL here. Stephon Diggs earlier today was traded to the Houston Texans. The Bills receive a 2025 second round pick via the Vikings. That's kind of ironic considering that's where Diggs started his career. And in return, the Texans get Diggs, a 2024 sixth round pick, and a 2025 fifth round pick. Bill, I sent this to you earlier. We have some thoughts. Why don't you go ahead and give us your thoughts on this trade and maybe on Stephon Diggs as a player, as a person, as a locker room, a locker room presence. Give us your thoughts on this trade.
Oh, well, you know, my first words to you were he's a cancer. We saw many times he tweeted weird things last season. They were a good team. They went to the playoffs, supposedly a good quarterback, Josh Allen. I say supposedly because we know how I feel about the man. But he's a problem. He really thinks he's really good, and he is. I think he has six straight seasons, I think, of 1,000 yards receiving. However, he's 30 years old. He was 30 years old in November, and believe it or not, Ryan, you know, we talk about 30, or they talk about the 30-year-old wall. He had 1,100, I think it was 1,160 or so yards receiving last season. 700 of those yards came in five games.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, I think 460 left over the course of the last 10, which I think he averaged 40. I think it was 450, if I remember correctly, 456 yards over the other 10 games, averaged 45.6 per game. Five of those six games were in the first seven games of the season. So he was terrible down the stretch. And he only had 73 yards in the playoffs, in two games in the playoffs, 73 yards. So he hit his birthday is in November. And guess what? Those five games, those big games he was having, a bunch of 100-yard games, were before he turned 30. As soon as he turned 30, the man fell off a cliff. He fell off a cliff. And so I'm wondering, did they really? I mean, I don't really believe the 30-year-old wall. But, I mean, he literally, like, hit it. Like, it was like, here's the wall.
He hit it mid-season.
Yeah, yeah, no more. His birthday is in November. In November, he was poo. Like, nothing good came around that time. I'm serious. Nothing good in the playoffs. And now they get a second round pick. Which, you know what's weird about this trade, too? The only parts that move this season are Stephon Diggs and a sixth rounder that both go to the Texans.
Yeah.
The stuff that goes to the Bills doesn't happen until next year.
Next year.
It's really
They're willing to wait.
And they have to carry his cap number. I think they're carrying like 20-some million or 31 overall at 20-some million this year. That's the Bills that have to carry it.
I reached out to my Cat Cave brethren and Shannon Smith here in the chat saying a receiver is on the menu for Buffalo. Yeah, they're looking for receivers in the draft. Your dad, Bill Sr. in the chat. What's up? What's up, Bill? Yeah, listen, I also saw in a Panthers group on Facebook that the Texans were now the odds-on favorite to win the Super Bowl out of the
Stop
AFC.
Stop.
And come on. And how the Lions GM isn't doing enough and this, that, and the other. For all the stats that you've already mentioned, it's a clear overreaction because Stephon Diggs, he complained about the way that it was in Buffalo a couple times. He didn't like his usage towards the end of his tenure in Minnesota. And it's funny that you texted me to say that he was a cancer because further down that comment thread, somebody called him a locker room cancer. Stephon Diggs is the 2020s Antonio Brown. Just he hasn't quite lost his mind like Antonio
until
Brown
he has. Strips on the field. I'm not going to go that far, but yeah, he
thinks that he's better than he is at this point in his career.
He's good. He's very good. He's very good. I mean, he's got a lot of he's had like 9,000 plus yards receiving in the NFL. He's been in the NFL for a long time. He gets 1,000 yards every year. But like I said, once he hit that 30 wall, you could look at his stats from last season. At the beginning of the season, he was absolutely on fire. He's on fire.
You know where he could thrive, Bill?
No.
You know where he could really thrive? The UFL.
No. Jesus.
I think he could help out some quarterbacks down there.
Probably,
Volley Polly, Bill, are you and Bully doing anything like fact or crap for the UFL this season? That's a good question.
We kind of did that. I kind of have that for you. Yeah, I kind of did that. I have a breakdown. You'll see.
Volley Polly actually mentioned something else to me, and I'm Volleyball, you messaged the Facebook page about something that you were doing on Volley's on Polly's Pick'ems. Send that in the chat so that I can we can discuss it on the show. Because I meant to mention it to Banker Bill, and it just slipped my mind. So yeah, Stephon Diggs no longer a Bill. He's in Houston. They've got a loaded wide receiver room already with a bunch of young guys. So now they add veteran leadership. It was kind of like I didn't feel great about the Dolphins picking up Chosen Anderson last year. It's the same way I feel about the Texans and Stephon Diggs. I think we have seen Diggs hit his peak. If he didn't like Josh Allen throwing him the football, I'm not sure how he's going to like CJ Stroud in year two throwing him the football.
Stroud, admittedly, is a better passer than Josh Allen right now in his career.
We'll see what happens in year two. That's still to be seen.
Yeah.
Reminder, if you're watching the show live with us tonight, we've got viewers on all platforms, on X, on YouTube, and on Facebook. Leave a comment in the chat, join a conversation, give us your thoughts on what we're talking about, and we'll read them here live on the air. Now, something that is not in the world of the NFL, we were actually going to peek behind the curtain here. We were actually going to talk about something else that we might say for next week. Or if we have time at the end of the show, maybe we bring it back up. But Bill brought something to my attention literally 3 minutes before this show came on the air. And I'm like, we got to talk about this. We're not going to talk. Yes. We're not going to go on the show and not talk about this. Presidents of colleges throughout the country met to propose a new model for the world of college athletics. I'm not sure what it means for the
college NCAA. College football alone. Okay. Yeah, just college football. Reported by On3, by the way.
So Banker Bill is going to take this news that broke a few hours ago, and he's going to run with it, and we're going to have a conversation. This is sort of something we haven't done before. So Banker Bill, I'm a heed the floor to you. Take it away. What is this news story about college presidents meeting to produce this new platform, this new model for college football?
So basically, last season, NCAA President Charlie Baker proposed a new model for college athletics. This is what the article says. We create a new subdivision of Division I football, and only for football. The rest of the what they call the non-revenue sports would still stay in the conference format. However, what this would do, and this is a bunch of executives, NFL number two executive Brian Rolapp is involved, Philadelphia 76 owner David Blitzer's involved, Syracuse Chancellor's involved, West Virginia president. What it would do is take the power four teams and Notre Dame as 70 permanent members of a college football super league. And the other FBS programs would be in a model that resembles promotion and relegation, like in European soccer. Yeah. Yeah. I like your face
That's
on that
interesting.
One. The 70 permanent members would be in 10 team divisions and would not move down to the second tier of the model, while an eighth division would be for the teams promoted from the second tier. So this is something Nick Saban brought up. You, I think, have brought it up on the show that they should have like their own. This is outside of the NCAA. What they also want to do is bring the NIL in-house. So I guess that you consider it like you could have salary caps basically and things like that. But that would be part of the regulations based on this super league. Honestly, when we talked about Ryan, I hadn't even gone through the entire article. I just got through the part of it that I just basically read to you. It is,
I mean, listen,
absolutely. It's crazy. You're talking about lots of people are talking. Go ahead. Lots of important people are talking here about actually making a college football super league.
I mean, considering this just broke a couple hours ago, there's a high likelihood that anybody watching this show or listening to it later on hasn't seen this article that came
hearing about it for the first time. Right.
So the idea that like you bring in 70 teams for a super league, like you already have to have some sort of like tiered system in order to find out what 70 schools to put in there. I'm assuming that would be sort of like the, like what's now considered the power three in the ACC, right? Like, cause you've got, 14 teams in the right. SEC. You've got, how many teams? I think we're pushing 15.
A lot in the Big Ten, like 16 in the Big Ten.
Yeah, so that would sound like the Big Four, like, and we've talked about this before. That's like the Big Four, where you get the Big Four in one super conference, and then I guess it used to be the FBS or the FCS, and then even lower. So like that'd be kind of interesting to see if like how that would work. Like, would bowl games now be the process in which the team can move up from being in the bottom league into the new like power league, because that would also affect like scheduling and TV contracts. Like that's a whole lot of stuff that would go into that. Like that would be, unless you have like the 70 team power league and you divvied up conferences regionally, which is what a lot of people want to do. God, that would be, I don't know how they would do it, Bill. Cause
it would change, think, like, it would change media rights negotiations. That would change completely. Cause ESPN has the rights to bowl season at the moment. They talk about revenue sharing between the teams that are locked in, the 70 teams that are locked in. That's kind of in the article a little bit. The future of NIL and how the NIL is gonna work is gonna change how like they bring this all together. But yeah, they're talking about they absolutely want to pay the athletes. Every team's gonna get paid, kind of thing. And then there's it's all about the money. We've been talking about that for a while. Now, when they did say this idea of regulation or relegation and promotion, that's where I went, ooh, because I think that one of the coolest things in all of sports on the planet is the relegation promotion in the English soccer leagues. I think that's amazing. It's always something to play for. These teams get paid more when they move up, that kind of thing. I love that. I think that's fantastic. And I wish we could do that like in baseball. I mean, think about that. Like a AAA team gets moved up to Major League Baseball and the Royals, they end up in AA like in two seasons. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. So I picked on the Royals because they're terrible. But
I was going to say you could have done the Athletics. It's the A's is who you should have been talking about.
Oh, yeah, the Athletics. Yeah, the Athletics would be absolutely getting beat by a AAA team within a couple weeks. Yeah. That kind of stuff is amazing. I would love to see that, especially we don't have that in soccer right now, but we have a tiered system in soccer in the United States. We just don't have a promotion relegation. So that would be really neat. I just feel bad for teams like you say, like Coastal Carolina, like they're just not going to be on the fringe all the time. You know, that would be rough.
Other than that, it's kind of cool. That's how, I mean, if right now it seems like the way to get into that Super League would to be a part of the other conferences.
So right. you would have to position yourself at this moment. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Coastal has to find a way into the ACC. Like,
well, they might be. So it's 70 teams. Well, I guess that's the four, right? It's mainly, but there's going to be extra too.
So you got, let's do the math real quick. The Pac-12 is gone. So the Big 12 has the Big 12.
Yeah.
Has,
but those two teams I think would be in somehow. You can't leave out Oregon. They're two ranked teams. Oregon State, Washington State.
They're in the ACC. Are they not in the ACC now?
No. We talked about this a couple,
weeks
ago. And I looked it up again and I found an article that was less than a month old that they are still the Pac-12, but they're two.
Yeah. Cause you've got
a Mountain West schedule.
That's crazy. All right.
Yeah.
So let's just hypothetically say there's how many are they? There are 20 teams in the Big 10 now. So they're the Big 20.
Off
the top of my head, so there's 20 teams in the Big 12. There's 12 or in the Big 10. There's officially 12 teams in the Big 12 because they added teams to replace Texas and Oklahoma, and they are back to 12 teams. So you're at 32 right now. You've got 16 teams in the SEC with Oklahoma and Texas.
Yeah. That makes 48. So
we were at 48. Let's call it 16 teams in the ACC. That puts us around 60. Yeah, you could add teams like Georgia, like not Georgia Southern or Georgia State, Coastal, East Carolina,
Boise State.
Yeah, you could add teams like that. It'd be interesting to see, like if a team fell off, like all of a sudden now they fired a head coach, they're out of the big. Let's just call it the Big 70, and now they've got to hire a coach to recruit against not being in the big 70. In order to find their way to be promoted into the league. Yeah. Dude, that sounds fun.
Some of that's fun. Some of that is really fun, right? I mean, you're looking at like, you know, University of Texas, San Antonio, that's a team that you would want, or UTEP. You know what I mean? Those are teams that aren't going to be in the Big 70s, but they're still like kind of cool teams. You know,
What about
Vanderbilt? Like Vanderbilt's terrible every year.
They get relegated real quick.
Except for when Sam Hartman was okay, you know, and then he goes to Notre Dame. But
that was Wake Forest.
Wake Forest, sorry, yeah, they're terrible every year too.
Yeah, like you're thinking with James, James Franklin was the head coach at Vanderbilt the last time they were any good.
That's right. That's right. That and they're James terrible Franklin every year. So why are they still, you know, they're going to be in the SEC. You get to play with the big boys and be, and just get thumped every year because you're in the 17 power, you know, super league. But it's because you've been in the SEC since, you know, anybody can remember, even though you're terrible.
We'll have to look more into this and maybe have a even a deeper conversation about this. That's next
the
week.
That is the entire article, though, Ryan. That was reported 2 hours ago, and that is the entire article. They're just saying that they're talking about doing this.
We can sort of, you know, what we could do is we could sort of like wrestling fans call it fantasy booking. We could fantasy book what this is going to look like when they do this league, like how they do salary caps to make it where you still get fair and balanced rosters. Because those teams, if those teams that fall out of the main league don't have the same resources as the teams in the Big 70 do, then the relegation promotion never happens.
Right.
So then you're going to have to see college football teams fold and this, that, and the other. So we'll talk more about that coming next week. Especially, and we're also going to have to talk about NFL draft. We are, 3 weeks away from the NFL draft? So we're going to have to get into some draft talk next week along with UFL. And speaking of UFL,
do the mocks, man. We got to do a mock draft.
I got to do a mock draft for the Cat Cave. And by the way, if you haven't already done so, go subscribe to the Keep Pounding Podcast Network, wherever it is that you get your podcasts, and like and subscribe to the Tobacco Road Sports Radio's YouTube channel so that you can catch the Cat Cave and all the other Carolina Panthers themed podcasts on the Keep Pounding Podcast Network, powered by the Fans First Sports Network, where you can find shows like mine and Shannon's and Michael Davis's The Cat Cave. Because every week, the last 2 weeks, last week, Michael did his mock draft to show what he would have drafted for the Panthers. Shannon just had a great draft where he was able to get the Remington Award-winning center from Oregon, as well as the Xavier Worthy from Texas in his mock draft. So, yeah, we'll get into some mock drafting here the next couple weeks as well. But as for right now, we're going to talk some UFL week one, the 2024 season, the inaugural season of the UFL. Bill, I'm not allowed you out, but you were on vacation, as our friend Andy would say, and so you didn't get to see much of any of the UFL. So you got to see highlights. Before we start breaking down the games, how did you like seeing those highlights of the games? Did you see like the top 10 list that ESPN had put out, or did you just kind of like?
I did. So, okay. No, I actually. So each game is broken down. Each video is about 10 to 12 minutes long on YouTube. You get to watch all the plays for the week and that kind of thing. I mean, honestly, it looked pretty good to me. I got really excited and realized that I'm probably one of the very few people on the planet, you know, in the United States that's really excited about UFL football. I like seeing what would be considered underdog players, and every single one of these guys is an underdog, right? They're in the UFL, they're not in the NFL, they're not on any practice squads. So these are all underdog football players, and I guess that gets me excited that these guys are just trying to live a dream. They're trying to make it happen, and they're trying to, you know, show out, and I get really kind of excited for that. And I feel like I'm one of the few people that does. I don't know many people that are watching the UFL, so I'm looking forward to watching it this week. I really am. I don't know how much of it I'm gonna try to watch all of it, right? But I mean, we got weird game times because of the TV deal.
Yeah, Zach Pierce back in the chat. The UFL is cool, but the women's basketball is fire this year. He's pulling from South Carolina to win. That's South Carolina.
I can't watch that. I have a hard time with women's college basketball because like men could play them 3-on-5 and still beat them. It's just I don't know why that is. I don't know why that is because I like women's sports. I have a daughter. I like women's sports, and I just don't get that excited over it.
I'm telling you right now, everybody that I've seen on social media has talked about the fact that the men's tournament has not been as good.
It's not been
as easy as fun to watch as, you know, as why? The women's tournament.
Because there were fewer upsets this season. Last season was absolute mayhem with the teams that were losing and when they were losing, and we lost high seeds early and things like that. This year it stuck. Like it was like we were talking about it. I think I was talking about it at work because we were in the brackets at work, and you know, it was like 1, 2, 3, 4 in one of the brackets. Like that's no fun. Nobody gets excited when all four seeds make it to the Sweet 16, you know, that kind of thing. And it wasn't that far off. The only team to really make a run at this point is NC State, and nobody really cares about that team. So they're still an ACC team. So you don't feel that like, ooh, it's not like it's a mid-major that's making a run. It's an ACC team.
Yeah. It's I've enjoyed March Madness this year primarily because I'm up for the number one spot in my pool this year. And then obviously with the Gamecocks being in there. Yeah.
Good for you. I was terrible. Thank you, Houston.
You know, I will say this before we go into UFL. There's a lot of people that talk crap about how the SEC was just top heavy and then they were garbage when they made the tournament. The ACC and the SEC have just as many teams in both Final Fours. So ACC homers can suck it. All right, Bill.
I think you just throw that out there. You're just like, hey, let's go to the next thing. Like,
yeah. All right. The inaugural game for the UFL. Clemson.
That was where that came from.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in the all crappy conference, you know what I'm saying? Like wow.
Did you come up with that one yourself?
No, that's been around for years.
I know. Right? All right. I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah.
The very first game in the UFL, got to see The Rock and Danny Garcia show up, the co-owners of this league, to watch the XFL champions and the USFL champions from 2023 face off. And it was the USFL champions going over, in a wrestling terms, the Birmingham Stallions take out the defending XFL champion Arlington Renegades 27-14. Let's start here by talking about Arlington, the losers of this game. We were excited. We talked about it on our show last week. Luis Perez returns to get a full offseason, so to speak, with Arlington. He gets to take back over after he was traded. I want to say it was the first XFL trade last year where he was let go from Vegas, and he was given the wheels to the Porsche, if you will. And he had 214 yards of touchdown with an interception. Some names that we did not talk about last week were I guess the unsung heroes for the Arlington Renegades on the losing end. Bill, from the highlights that you saw from this game, how'd you feel about what we saw out of Arlington?
They were crap. to put it bluntly, they were not good.
Yeah,
not good. It looked like it started okay, and they got away from them late, but they just. I mean, Luis Perez looks like a pretty decent quarterback, but then also looks bad at times. And, you know, he had a nice deep throw for a touchdown. But other than that, they couldn't run the ball at all. No. So that was bad. They just didn't look that great. And obviously Birmingham looks a whole lot better. And, man, they have a quarterback. By the way, I dumped on Phil Simms earlier. The only person he talked about from the UFL was Matt Corral. That's it. Oh, I saw him make a couple of nice throws, he says. Yeah.
Yeah.
Five better throws than you ever made in your career, Phil or Chris. Relax. Chris,
yeah. We'll get there. You mentioned they couldn't run the ball. Buddy Brown, running back out of West Virginia, only managed eight carries for 30 yards, under 4.4 yards per carry. Your guy, Sal Canella, that we mentioned last week on the show, four catches, 49 yards. Watch he was not the leading receiver, but he was really close to it. Some guys to talk about on the defensive side, however, Darren Evans, he's a defensive back out of LSU, had four tackles and an interception in this game. And then a guy that I was hoping to see a lot of out of the XFL last year, played on a crappy team, but he wound up with four tackles and a sack. And that's Vic Beasley, former All-Pro out of Clemson.
We talked about him on the primer. Yeah,
that we did. So, you know, Arlington's got room to grow, right? Like, that's how they were last year. They came out, they came from the dead and won the whole thing after having a really bad start to the season. So we'll see.
It's a good way to put it. It's a good way to put it. When your football team plays poorly, they have room to grow.
Listen, you can't get more winless, right? Are you
saying that of being a South Carolina fan?
I swear to God. I swear to God. Yeah.
Can't go any. There's nowhere to go but up. That's one of those cliches. You have room to grow.
Yeah. When you look on the other side at Birmingham, you mentioned, yeah, Birmingham outgained Arlington 397 yards to 262. A lot of it was done on the ground as Matt Corral, it seemed at one point in the game he was struggling and he was benched for Adrian Martinez, primarily because of Adrian Martinez's ability to run the ball. And then Martinez got hurt, and that's when Corral came back in and finished strong. Corral, 201 yards passing. They have a touchdown and an interception. Martinez, three carries, 52 yards from the quarterback spot. But your leading running back is a guy that played close to here at Coastal Carolina, and C.J. Marable, 3.7 yards per carry, the same average as Letty Brown, but he was able to get 67 yards. He also found the end zone. And a guy that I talked about on the show last week, Deion Kane, former wide receiver out of Clemson, 66 yards and a touchdown on three catches, had a huge touchdown catch. I believe right before halftime for Birmingham from what you got to see in the highlights, Bill. How do you think? I mean, Birmingham, again, defending two-time USFL champions. There was a lot of guys that we didn't really know names of last year, and that's part of the reason why we didn't watch the USFL. But they looked everything as advertised in this game. Would you not say so?
They look good. I'm looking forward to seeing Matt Corral play another week. I think we have to give these guys a little bit of a pass because we saw last season when we watched the XFL, because I don't think either one of us watched the USFL very much. No. We watched the XFL. The first week was a little rough. It was a little rough. We admitted that it was like, I hope it's going to get better. And then it did. So these teams are learning each other. They're getting into the swing of how this is all going to work. And, you know, hey, we'll see what happens next week. I'm looking forward to watching Birmingham play again this week.
Yeah, another fun game ahead of Birmingham this week. We'll get to that later on in the show. Next up, your second game Saturday afternoon featured St. Louis Battlehawks, headed up by A.J. McCarron, and the Michigan Panthers, who headed up by E.J. Perry, a quarterback out of Brown, was their starting quarterback. Did not play all that well, but St. Louis wasn't much better. Let's start with St. Louis here because Michigan gets the win 18-16. Under some pretty miraculous circumstances, but let's start off in St. Louis. Bill, what'd you see out of St. Louis in the highlights? I mean, you got to see a couple of big plays. There was a big fourth down where Marcel Aitman caught a sideline pass from A.J. McCarron that continued to drive. Wayne Gallman looked pretty decent despite having only 3.1 yards of carry. We talked about him coming out of his time in the NFL. What were your thoughts on this St. Louis Battlehawks version 2.0 here?
I didn't feel like they looked all that fantastic either. I mean, here's what they can't do. They can't pass block. They look like they were getting – McCarron was getting hit a lot. There was a lot of pressure on McCarron. He got hit enough early that he looked like he got happy feet. And we didn't see that a lot out of McCarron last season. Still ended up turning in a pretty decent game. I mean, it's not – he threw up for 216 yards, two touchdowns. But, yeah, I mean, they're going to have to learn to pass block. And, what's cool about that game is if you want exciting football – that wasn't the game, but the ending was, right? I mean, it wasn't that exciting. It was pretty slow. They weren't scoring a ton. Usually, high scoring games are more exciting. It's sort of a defensive struggle, but there was at the ending there. The Battlehawks scored with less than a minute to play, and then Michigan. I mean, what can you say? What can you say? Yeah. Dude hits us Jake Bailey. It's a 64-yard field goal to win the game. I mean, and it was good from 68. I mean, that thing was a bomb.
He would have broken Justin Tucker's record had it been farther back. Yeah.
Yeah. That was super cool.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I mean, I'm sure that's what the kicker was thinking was what can I say except you're welcome? You know, Birmingham, or I'm sorry, did Michigan.
Was that a Moana moment right there?
That was a Moana moment.
Did you do that with the Rock? Was that a Rock thing?
That's exactly what I did. Yeah. Wow. The Rock said it on TV. The Rock's done it on TV like twice now. It's fantastic. If you're not watching WrestleMania's this weekend, we have a wrestling show coming.
It's a cartoon. Tomorrow. He was a character in a cartoon.
And now he's turned it into his bad guy gimmick, and he's saying it to wrestlers on TV. It's phenomenal. We're going to be doing a WrestleMania preview tomorrow. Both Michael Davis and PJ Steven will be here to break down WrestleMania.
It's a segue.
But let's get back here to the UFL talk. Because like
that
you said.
That was awesome. That was a good job, Ryan. I got to give you one on that one.
I appreciate that. Yeah. You mentioned Jake Bates, the kicker out of Arkansas, kicks a 64-yarder with 3 seconds left. Yeah. Jake Bates, as in the Bates Motel. Yeah. As in, kicks a 64-yarder. The rest of the team didn't look all that good. E.J. Perry throws two interceptions, 176 yards passing. Not great. Your leading rusher did have a decent day. Wes Hills from Slippery Rock, 7.7 yards a carry. Your leading receiver, Devin Ross out of Colorado. I think the big news out of here is some of the defensive stats. Kai Nakua, older brother of Puka Nakua, 11 tackles, a sack, and 2 tackles for loss in this game. You look at
that guy was a former beast.
Yeah, he was all over the field. Daniel Wise from Kansas had 8 tackles and 2 sacks. So some really big numbers from these guys on this Michigan Panthers defense who's able to pull out a win. And the crazy thing about it is that 64-yard field goal, it is the longest field goal in UFL history, but it's not the longest field goal in Ford Field, as I believe Justin Tucker kicked his 67-yarder from the same
66-yarder against the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, there you go. Against the Lions. It was one of those games that season where the Lions lost by a single possession, and I told everybody they were the best 3 or 4 win team in the NFL. 3 years later, they're in the NFC Championship game. That's neither here nor there. Bill, How do you like what you saw about the Michigan Panthers? I mean, they didn't deserve to win this game until they did. A 64-yarder is nothing to scoff at, but I think it's fair to say that Michigan's going to be struggling all season.
You know, Well, I mean, how do you say that? The Battle Hawks we thought were going to be pretty good. They've got a good quarterback. They didn't pass block. So, I mean, I don't know. EJ Perry didn't look fantastic throwing the ball, but he looked pretty good running the ball. Yeah. And they have a decent running back. And we talked about the running back. I think he was played for the New Orleans Breakers last season. Was that West Hills?
Yeah, West Hills for Slippery Rock. That's right.
Yeah, and he was the best runner in the UFL this week. So I don't know, man. I don't know. Michigan can grind it out. EJ Perry maybe a little bit better throwing, you know, through the air. I think he threw two picks, you know, this week. So I don't know. Did they deserve to win? Maybe, maybe not. But I mean, we thought St. Louis was going to be pretty good, and they ended up beating what we thought was going to be a good team.
Yeah, the second USFL team to knock off an XFL team from last season. And again, talking about the teams that we liked watching, we thought the XFL was more entertaining football. And for that matter, there was probably more talent on these teams. And so far, through the first two games, we did not see that being the case as Michigan knocks off St. Louis while Birmingham knocks off Arlington. Let's go to game three, where we get two XFL teams from last year squaring off. And another game that we did not pick correctly, the San Antonio Brahmas host.
Thanks, Ryan. That's good.
The DC Defenders. You know,
we'd be terrible again, guys.
You know, you always talk about you're wrong again, Ryan. That's a prime example of saying we're both wrong again.
No, wait a minute. We have to be fair to ourselves with this game, though, because there's not a player that played for the San Antonio Brahmas that we expected to play. Like went down the primer, and we're not really talking about it. I mean, there are a couple, but it was brutal. Like I wrote things like, here's who the people we talked about. And we had 5-0s where we talked about, hey, this player might play like Quentin Dormady,
yeah.
Bryson Aline, Landon Akers, TJ Vasher, all players that came back from last season. They didn't play. There's all new players that are playing for San Antonio, and they turned out to be pretty good.
I should mention at the end of this breakdown, we're going to go through the players that we talked about last week and see if any of them had decent weeks. Bill's got a list of that that we're going to go through here so that we can actually kind of like visibly see how bad we were. We do have a comment in the chat. Destroying YouTuber turned kicker plays in his first UFL game.
For kicker turned YouTuber turned kicker.
We're going to get to talk about him when we break down the San Antonio Brahmas in this game. Let's start off with the DC Defenders. We were a couple guys we were expecting to see. Jordan Ta'amu balls out 235 yards. He does throw an interception, no touchdowns in this game. I mentioned last week that Abram Smith more likely out for the season. So their leading running back is a guy named Cameron Harris out of Miami, Florida, but averaged 2.6 yards a carry. You talk about guys that we didn't really talk about from DC, kind of doing it for DC this week. You look at Ty Scott from Missouri State being their leading receiver, 87 yards. Brandon Smith from Iowa, 47 yards. But again, the things that stood out to me were on the defensive side where Isaiah Johnson, defensive back from Houston, had 7 tackles, tackle for loss, and a forced fumble. And my guy DJ Swearinger got that fumble recovery alongside 4 tackles, which is a guy that, again, we talked on the show last week. I know I'm jumping ahead, but a fumble recovery for the former Gamecock, former Washington commander. I don't know if he was ever a commander, but Bill, kind of a disappointing start for the DC Defenders. Now that this is on the road, they get a home game this week. Based on what you saw, do you think they turn it around this coming week?
No. It's simple as that, right? Yeah. I didn't get very excited. You know, this team was based, it was a running-based team last year.
Yep.
We love their wide receivers. You know, Chris Blair, Lucky Jackson. They had another, I forget who the other one was. They had another good receiver. We enjoyed watching their wide receivers play.
Yeah.
But they were a running based team last year. Ta'amu ran, he was, you know, 7th in the league in rushing. And they had Abram Smith, who was the best running back in the XFL last season. They couldn't run the ball this week. Now, I don't know if that means that San Antonio is a very good rushing defense, or if they are going to struggle rushing the ball all season long. If they can't do that, Ta'amu's not a passer. So yeah, they're going to have problems. I'm a little bit concerned, but it's only week one. And as Ryan would say, they have only up to go or something like that.
They've got room to grow.
Yeah.
They've got room to grow. Would you believe they're a favorite?
Make something up. What would you say to the Gamecocks after 3 weeks of the season? There's nowhere to go but up.
there's always next year, I guess. Would you believe DC is a favorite this coming weekend? We'll get to that. They are. They're favorite.
Hey, they were a very good team last season. People are still hoping that's going to happen again this season.
Yeah, we talked about it. There was a game last season that they played that we just expected them to run. And finally they didn't. And Ta'amu killed it. But they relied on Ta'amu too much this week.
But they had a very good group of pass catchers, XFL style. You know, guys that almost made the NFL this year. I think, I think Lucky Jackson did latch on as a practice squad player with the Vikings. So, or at least close. But yeah, they were very good. Yes, they were.
Volleyball yes, says not so fast. Maker Bill Houston was equally as bad in their game.
They were the worst team in the UFL this week.
And that's
I have a reason for that.
And that's who DC plays. That's probably why they're favorite. All right,
that makes sense.
Let's look at San Antonio again. A new look San Antonio, because they a lot of the guys that we saw play for San Antonio last year didn't play in this game. Chase Garbers out of Cal gets the start. Garbers.
Where did he even come from? We didn't have him at all in our primer.
Not at all, but he was the starter at the University of California. 158 yards, 2 touchdowns, not a lot of passing yards, but a guy that I'm gonna die on this hill. I completely goofed on Kalen Ballage last year. Yes. But I was really high on the running back for San Antonio and had himself a good game. 5.2 yards per carry and a 28-yard touchdown reception for former Maryland Terrapin Anthony McFarland Jr.
He
a phenomenal
good.
Game. He looked explosive.
Quick.
When he got in the open field. And then you had Jontre Kirkland. That's a familiar name. 8 catches, 61 yards, and caught one of the touchdowns from Chase Garbers. Listen, the probably the most exciting play of this game and the most exciting play of the UFL weekend was when San Antonio came on the field to kick a field goal in DC to try to ice former, again, kicker turned YouTuber turned kicker, Donald De La Haye, otherwise known as Destroying, and they pulled out of field goal formation and punter Brad Wing, another name that I mentioned previously, especially last year, LSU alum, throws a 40-yard touchdown pass to offensive lineman. And, his name is not scrolling across the screen yet.
Doesn't matter.
But Alex Millett, probably the most exciting play we'll see in the UFL this season. I know you saw
that. You know what he didn't write, Ryan? You don't need to write. I watched it. He declared himself eligible when he came in the game. He should be playing for the Lions. That's what we're thinking at this point. Maybe they would have been the one seed. Maybe they win the Super Bowl. I have no idea. But he declared himself eligible. I saw it on the highlight. And, man, that was exciting. And somebody tweeted, I forget who tweeted it, but they said the best play in the UFL all season happened week one.
Yep.
Meaning there's not going to be anything better. That was the best one.
And even more exciting is when these guys make big plays. You got the sideline reporter interviewing the players after the play.
I love that.
So they've got Millett like sucking wind and just like chalk one up for the fat guys, man. Fat guy touchdown. I'm here for it. This game, DC tried to make this a game late, but an interception returned 90 yards. Gave San Antonio essentially the win. Bill, outside of the fake punt or the fake field goal, do you like what you see out of San Antonio? Do you think they're going to be a threat here in the UFL this season?
Absolutely. I mean, you're already singing the praises of the running back. We've seen him play 1 week, but he looked good. And then, I'll tell you what, I liked Lucky Jackson last season, but we also liked Jontre Kirkland when he was playing for Vegas. He was really, really electric. And we know who this guy is. We did the research on him last season. He played for LSU when the great receiver group was there. And he was playing, he started as a quarterback, moved to wide receiver, and he was playing underneath, you know, Jamar Chase and other players. Justin Jefferson. That's who this guy is. So he couldn't get much of an opportunity at LSU. And here he is in the UFL. And he was super electric last year, gets injured. And here he is in his first game and is probably the best wide receiver on any field. So this is exciting. I am a big fan of Jontre Kirkland. I might be a big fan of the San Antonio Brahmas this year, Ryan. They looked fantastic. I don't know who Chase Garbers is, but dang, good stuff. That was fun. Those are fun highlights.
Did we talk about Kirkland was the guy that got a chest injury in week four and couldn't play the rest of the season last year?
Yeah. He got into week five. He played four games, got into week five, and got injured. He threw a touchdown last season. He was a good wide receiver. He played pretty well. And we thought he was electric on that team. And as soon as he left, remember, now you remember when he was playing, the Vipers weren't bad. They weren't great, but they weren't exactly. And as soon as he left, they were terrible. And Luis Perez got traded because of it.
Yeah, listen, I'm with you. San Antonio might be the most improved team in the XFL division of the UFL this year. So it's interesting to see what happens going forward. They have a tough matchup this week. They got a tough matchup this week with one of the teams we're about to talk about here in your second Sunday game, featuring the Memphis Showboats and the Houston Roughnecks. Houston Roughnecks might be the worst team in the UFL this season.
Might be.
Memphis is the only road team to get a win in week one, Bill. The only road team to get a win in week one. 18-12 is your final. Some other names in Memphis that we weren't really ready to see. Case Cookus. Cookus be cooking. Cookus is in the kitchen. They have tried to put all sorts of cooking references for Case Cookus out of Northern Arizona. 204 yards, a touchdown, a pick. He also had 4 yards per carry in this game. Darius Victor was a name that we talked about last week. But you talk about a team that couldn't run the ball. 0.3 yards per carry for Darius Victor.
On 10 carries.
10 carries, 3 yards is your stat line for Darius Victor. So it's not like he ran like twice and they're like, we'll just go somewhere else.
And
no.
He was good. He led the USFL in rushing 2 seasons ago and had 500 yards rushing for New Jersey last season. So he's a good running back and could not run the ball.
Couldn't get the ball going. Houston actually had a pretty decent defensive presence in this game, but so did Memphis. Linebacker Greg Reeves from USF led the team with two sacks in this game. Showing that they're able to get after the quarterback as Memphis gets the win. Let's go over to Houston because we talked about the fact that they might be the worst team in the UFL and they had the worst weekend. Only mustered 12 points. They were the only team, if I'm not mistaken, in the UFL this weekend not to find the end. I'm wrong. Garantano found the end zone. They just couldn't get extra points, apparently. Garantano, quarterback formerly of Tennessee. I forgot where he finished his college career.
Washington State,
that's it. 157 passing yards. I mean, the offense didn't look good. TJ Pledger is their leading running rusher from Utah, 2.5 yards a carry. But you had Kirk Merritt, a running back out of Arkansas State, was your leading receiver. I mean, just not a lot to talk about from an offensive standpoint, but I was pleasantly surprised because this is the name that I didn't see last week. We did our primer. Former first-round pick of the San Francisco 49ers, former national champion with the Alabama Crimson Tide, Reuben Foster, is on this team, had 6 tackles. He had a leaping interception early in this game. I believe he either forced or recovered a fumble this game. Reuben Foster is trying to make a name back in the NFL, and this is the right way to do it despite being on the losing end here. Bill, what did you see?
Bad news for Reuben Foster is he had opportunities this past season, including the Miami Dolphins worked him out after Jerome Baker got injured. Dolphins did not sign him. Reuben Foster played for the Pittsburgh Maulers last season and was pretty darn good. So he is on, but he was good again this week. He was flying all over the field. I think he had a interception and then made some, at least had another sack and made some plays. But Houston, they stink. That just wasn't good. I'm not a big fan of Guarantano. I didn't think he was going to be very good on this team. I didn't think he would start. I thought Reed Sinnett would be the starter in Houston, and he's not. So, we'll have to see what happens week two. I think Guarantano, the reason that he is starting is because he is pretty mobile. Reed Sinnett is not. Reed Sinnett more of a pocket passer. And we talk about how the offensive lines don't do very well in the UFL or XFL, whatever, you know, USFL, whatever it is. I think that's what Guarantano's in the game for. They're expecting him to be running around, running for his life. So he's in the game. Threw for 158 yards. Not impressive. If you're a Roughnecks fan, which Ryan, you were until this, it's really the Gamblers, right? It's really the Gamblers. We know it's the Roughnecks, but it's actually the Gamblers. They're not. I don't think they're going to be very good, man. And by the way, what happened to Mark Thompson?
That's a good question.
Florida Gator, Mark Thompson. Was their leading rusher last season? Is he injured? Because he didn't play.
I want to say he was one of the guys that was on the suspended list. I have to let me look at my notes from last week. We're talking about. Okay. We're talking about Houston, so let's go to the Houston page that I've got.
Houston Gamblers or Houston Roughnecks.
He was all USFL rushing touchdowns leader last year. So I don't maybe he got hurt. That's a good question. I was thinking the same thing when I was pulling up stat lines. Let's, you know what? Let's go a little further. I don't have, yeah, here we go. Memphis, Houston. Let's look up game stats here. Yeah, he did not play at all. He did not record a stat in this game. So yeah, I'm interested to see what happened there. We'll have to do some research off air. So there you go. Memphis, the only road team to get a win. The XFL teams did not fare well against the USFL in week one, going 1-2, I believe, or no, 0-2. And then the other two games were former XFL versus XFL. So the XFL teams went 1-3 over the weekend, primarily because one played in a former XFL team. Bill, before we start breaking down and predicting week two, let's talk about where Bully and Banker Bill were right and Bully and Banker Bill were wrong from the UFL primer. You're the one that did this research, so I'm going to let you take it away like you did with the college football breaking news earlier in the show.
Well, it's tough. I feel like Colin Cowherd. Where was Colin right? Where was Colin wrong? But it wasn't really about what we talked about a lot of players. These are mainly mine, Ryan, because I didn't write down the players that you were talking about because you did it a little differently
than most of them were right though. Most of them were right. Most of them were the same.
So we'll start with the Birmingham Stallions. They won the first game. We talked about Matt Corral. We thought he was going to be pretty good. He was. Adrian Martinez, we said that was going to be a quarterback battle, and it was. They both, you know, you said Corral was benched. He came in and played pretty well after he came back, after Adrian Martinez got hurt. CJ Marable, we were correct about him. We talked about him. We also talked about Larry Roundtree, who had some NFL experience, didn't play in the game, so we were wrong about that. Talked about Deion Kane. He played, and we also got excited about Amari Rodgers and Gary Jennings. They had two targets in that game. Amari Rodgers had one reception for 13 yards. Gary Jennings did nothing. So not super correct about the Birmingham Stallions. We talked about the Arlington Renegades. Luis Perez was good. Davion Smith got a lot of carries. Well, seven for 17 yards. He was terrible. Letty Brown, his backup for last season, he was all equally terrible. 8 carries for 30 yards. We talked about Morgan Ellison. Morgan Ellison got drafted in the dispersal draft. He did not play, did nothing. So that we talked a lot about Morgan Ellison for no reason, Ryan. That's fun to do, right? Tyler Vaughn's three receptions, 15 yards. Deontay Burnett was their big pickup wide receiver. He was their best receiver, 5 receptions, 36 yards. That's not exciting. And Sal Canella, our favorite guy, raw chicken. He had 4 catches, 49 yards. So, what did you say?
I talked about Vic Beasley. So we'll go over 50% because Beasley had a sack in this game. So.
Yeah, Beasley did good there.
Yeah. All right, next game,
Michigan Panthers. Yeah. We had E.J. Perry as the starter. He was the only returning quarterback. We said he was going to be a starter. He was. We talked about him. Wes Hills, we talked about him being their big – they were rebuilding their running backs, and we talked about him being the good running back there. He was. Wide receivers, we were terrible. Trey Quinn, Corey Coleman, Devin Gray. We talked about Corey Coleman being the big pickup. He did nothing. Didn't even see him. And Cole Hikutini, we talked about him being their only tight end. He did catch one pass for 41 yards. So that
was a pretty fun catch to watch, too.
It was decent. St. Louis Battlehawks, Adrian McCarron got that right. Mateo Durant was the returning running back. He did nothing. We don't even know if he's they said he was on the roster. He didn't play. We did talk about Wayne Gallman being the exciting pickup there, that he was going to be their feature back. We were right. Hakeem Butler was their big returning wide receiver. Actually, he's playing tight end now. He made two catches for 23 yards. We did talk about Darius Shepherd being there. He made 5 catches for 34 yards. Jakor Pearson was their big pickup at wide receiver. He didn't play. And Jake Sutherland, the tight end, 3 catches, 45 yards, and a touchdown. So we were pretty right there. I think we did pretty good there, Ryan. I think we had a pretty good game.
Yeah, and Butler had a big sideline catch as well in this game. I mean, we talked about one that was towards the end of the game by Marcel Aitman, but Butler also had one in this game too. By the way, your Uncle Gary Patton, no wonder Bankable is so well-informed. He spent 4 days investigating this stuff. There may have been a few minutes of dedicating beer drinking overall commitment. So
100%.
He appreciates the grinds.
Yeah.
All right. I'm right there with you. We pretty much nailed the guys outside of the wide receivers for Michigan in this game. We pretty much nailed everything else. All right, let's go. Defenders and Brahmas. Where were we?
San Antonio Brahmas. Quentin Doherty is the starter. They acquired him. They drafted him. Did nothing. Kurt Bankert did nothing. We talked about him. Bryson Alleen, the running back, dispersal draft player. He was their top running back in the dispersal draft. Did nothing. Landon Akers, wide receiver, and TJ Vasher, wide receiver. Both of them returned. Did nothing. We talked about Jontre Kirkland being the exciting wide receiver pickup for that team. He was fantastic. 8 receptions, 61 yards at a touchdown. And then two returning tight ends, Elise Mack and they had one returning tight end, Elise Mack. He had one catch for negative yards, Ryan. So you had more yards catching than he did. So that's not great. But we also talked about Cody Latimer being a very exciting pickup for them, being that he was the best tight end in the XFL last season. He had one catch for 7 yards. So not very exciting whatsoever. BC Defenders, we talked about Samu. You talked about him. He had a good game. Jalen McClendon, we talked about him being picked up from Vegas last season. He did nothing. Brandon Smith, the best returning wide receiver after they were remaking their entire wide receiver group. He did have 4 catches for 48 yards, so that's not bad. We talked about Kiki Kuti, who had, a whole bunch of receiving yards in the NFL. He only had 4 receptions for 14 yards. Bradley Moore, I think Bradley Moore actually has a hyphenated last name now. I think it's Moore something. He needed to catch more because he only had 4 catches for 19 yards. We also talked about Alex Alexis, which was their other good returning tight end. He did nothing. So pretty bad in that game. We were really bad with the Brahmas. Obviously, we talked about it. The Brahmas remade their roster. They look pretty good.
Yeah, I don't think there's really much more to say about that. Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, last game of the weekend, Memphis Showboats. We actually predicted the starter, Ryan. They had three different quarterbacks. We didn't know who the starter was going to be. We predicted Case Cookus. He was coming from, I believe, the Philadelphia Stars last season. Mm-hmm. He has their starter, 204 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. Troy Williams and Josh Love were the other two that were the quarterbacks in that battle. They did nothing. Kennedy Brooks, they acquired him in the dispersal draft at running back. He didn't do anything. Darius Victory, we talked about him. They acquired him as well. 10 carries, 3 yards. That's terrible. Vinny Papale. Remember Vinny Papale, Vince Papale's kid? 4 catches, 36 yards, and 1 touchdown. And if you remember the touchdown, Ryan, it was an absolute tippy-toe catch. I still haven't figured out how
he got the end zone.
Yeah, threw his hands in the air. Feet never came off the ground. That's pretty awesome.
As soon as he scored it, I was like, Bill's going to love this. Yeah.
I think he learned it from Dick Vermeil when he was a kid. That's my guess. Anyway, we'll move forward. D. Anderson, their big wide receiver addition, did nothing. Sage Surratt was their big tight end addition. Came from the New Orleans Breakers last season. He had 2 receptions for 38 yards. So we did okay in that game. We did okay. I'm sorry. We also had the Houston Roughnecks. We talked about Guarantano. Yeah. He was terrible.
He was bad, but he was the guy to watch. Nothing.
We thought Reed Sinnett would be the starter. He wasn't. He did come in. He threw a pass. Missed it. Mark Thompson didn't do anything. TJ Pledger, 6 carries, 14 yards. Justin Hall was the only, or I guess, best returning wide receiver. 1 catch for 14 yards. Kirk Merritt, I think you talked about him last week, Ryan. He spent time in the NFL. I think he played for the Dolphins at one point. 4 catches, 34 yards. And their big pickup, we thought, at wide receiver was Isaiah Henney. He had 2 catches for 9 yards, so not very good at all. But yeah, that game wasn't great. I think we did okay.
Yeah,
better than a 50% hit rate. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we told you who to watch out for, and now we're going to tell you the games to look out for this coming weekend. I know you've got the Final Four. I know you've got WrestleMania, but there are 4 games in the UFL this weekend. If I can,
what's WrestleMania
times here? Watch WrestleMania. Listen to you. You know, half of the show is wrestling, Bill. Half of Tap Outs and Touchdowns is a wrestling show.
I thought you were talking about the UFC.
Oh, Jesus Christmas. Listen to you. You just like to stir
all right,
up
I've got
stuff.
Your times, Ryan. Don't worry, I've got your times. First Thank game you. Of the week at noon on Saturday, the San Antonio Brahmas take on the Memphis Showboats. Both of them are 1-0. This should be a pretty fun game. Like you said, Memphis Showboats were the only team to win on the road this week. So I think that's going to be kind of fun. You're going to find that on ESPN. Again, weird times on Saturdays. That one's at noon. And then you're going to wait all day long till 8 p.m. to watch the Arlington Renegades versus the St. Louis Battlehawks.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to be able to watch.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to say, I don't think I'm going to be able to watch this game. I might DVR it because I'm either going to be out with y'all or I'm going to be watching WrestleMania, one or the other. So I'm not going to be able to watch this game live. Let's pick it real quick, though. San Antonio -2.5 at Memphis. Bill, I'm going to start us off here. I'm going to take San Antonio, man. Like, that's a three point spread. But, yeah,
I think
they've got it.
And I like that one, too. San Antonio looked good.
Yep. I'm gonna take Arlington to cover. I mean, there wasn't much of a blowout this weekend. And I think you talk about a bounce back.
You see that? My earbud fell out. It was so shocked. It was like, so I'm out of here. I'm gone. Like, we're done.
Give me Arlington to cover, Bill. Who you got? St. Louis is -5.
Nah, see, I'm actually going to take St. Louis in this one. I don't feel good about Arlington.
All right, give us the times where you can watch the Sunday games.
All right, let me get back to our schedule here. All right, noon again on Sunday. So it'll be noon. That's weird. I wish it was one, but it's noon. Let's just say that they're doing a good job holding it at noon. But anyway, that's going to be the Birmingham Stallions head to Michigan to take on the Michigan Panthers, which is a pretty decent matchup as we have two winners. This is where Ryan says that Michigan doesn't deserve to have be 1-0, even though they had a kick that went 64 yards in the air. We'll see what happens there. And then at 4 p.m., which is the only normal starting NFL time that we're seeing this on a Sunday, is the Houston Roughnecks at the D.C. Defenders. What's really cool about the late games, Ryan, is you're probably going to have the two best crowds you're going to see all season. The St. Louis Battlehawks apparently have sold 50,000 tickets to that game.
Wow. I think they averaged like 12,000 a game last weekend overall. Yeah. All right, let's pick
What was them. Better, though, was the TV ratings. The TV ratings are actually pretty good. Especially going up against, I can give you the
March Madness. If you want.
Yeah, they were going up against March Madness. The Saturday games were 1.18 million on Fox, and the late game was 1.349 million, which is pretty darn good. Sunday kind of stunk again up against March Madness. San Antonio, D.C. was 960,000, and Houston, Memphis, everybody was taking a nap, apparently 703,000. That wasn't good. So we'll see what happens.
It was a bad game. That's why they didn't tune into it. Let's pick these games. Birmingham, 6.5-point favorite at Michigan. Give me Birmingham. I think Michigan's that bad.
Bill, I agree.
Say you.
I agree. Give me Birmingham.
Shannon Smith says Beer Snake for the win.
Yes, as agreed.
DC Finners gets a 5-point favorite over Houston. Houston may be the worst team in the UFL. Give me DC to take this.
I'll take DC as well.
Bill, we've run a little bit over. We just talked about ratings or TV ratings and that sort of thing. We're in overtime. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we sign off for this for the show?
I just think, honestly, what I'm looking forward to is I think the UFL is going to get a little bit better in its second week. I think we should see some better football. I know that it was week one and they had their training camps and all that thing. But even with the NFL is always great week one. You see a lot of guys just trying to figure it out. I think that was happening last week. And I think it's going to be even better this week. So I'm really looking forward to finally watching some live football. I did have a good time where I went. Uncle Gary was in there, and I was hanging out with Uncle Gary. Had an absolute blast down at his house. So I'm looking forward to watching the UFL this week. But I'd rather be in Florida again, to be honest. I mean, it's a good time. And well, I wore the Marlins hat in a tribute to being down there last week.
Yeah, I think they were one of the last winless teams in Major League Baseball. Do they have a win? Do they still?
I'm not wearing it because they're good, Ryan. I wore the good team last week. The Yankees are 6-1. How are you doing? How you doing? How are you going to catch them now?
All right. Yeah. All right. That's I think that's the show. Make sure you go. If you've been watching live, you know where to find us on Facebook.com/tapoutsandtouchdowns, on X at tapouts and TDs, on YouTube at tapouts and touchdowns. Remember to go and like and subscribe to the Tobacco Road Sports Radio's YouTube channel. This show actually airs on that network as well. So make sure you go and follow them, Tobacco Road Sports Radio, wherever you find your podcast as well. And go to Tobacco Radio, TobaccoRoadSportsRadio.com, because they'll do their afternoon. They've got a lot of really, really fun content on that platform. And that's where you can also find the Cat Cave as part of the Keep Pounding Podcast Network. Bill, I think there was something else, but it's honestly slipped my mind, and it's kind of frustrating.
I know what it was, but we'll save it for next week.
Yeah. I know what it was now. Reminder, I think we're going to go live tomorrow. If we don't go live, there still will be a new wrestling show come tomorrow. Michael Davis from Out of Pocket with Michael Davis and Drop the Mic with Michael Davis will be joining me to talk about WrestleMania 40 this coming weekend from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Cool. Night one features a main event of Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins taking on Roman Reigns and the final boss, The Rock. Night two will end as Cody Rhodes takes on Roman Reigns for the undisputed WWE Universal Championship.
Wait, what is this?
Come on, Bill. You're about to get the mute, man. We're talking.
Is this WrestleMania? Is this what WrestleMania is?
I know who these people are. Yes, I know you do.
Okay. Now you got me kind of interested. How do we see this?
On Peacock. You know, we can.
Is it free on Peacock?
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah, maybe that's what we do for Saturday night instead of going out. We go to your house and watch WrestleMania at night one.
I have three TVs upstairs. We could watch UFL and WrestleMania at the same time.
There you go. So, like I said, Michael Davis, PJ Steven, we're going to be breaking down all the both match cards, making predictions. It's been a while since we've done wrestling on tapouts and touchdowns. Bill's wife in the chat or not, she doesn't want to have UFL and wrestling on TV. I think she would enjoy it. I think Logan Paul's wrestling on night one for the United States Championship. He'll be defending against Randy Orton and Kevin Owens. So we're going to be talking wrestling, whether it's live tomorrow or not. There will be a new wrestling show coming tomorrow, our wrestling premiere of season 6 on Tapouts and Touchdowns. But for this evening, that's our show. Hope you've enjoyed hearing more about the UFL, talking about the potential new world of college football, if anything goes through. But hope you've enjoyed being with us live. Make sure you go and like, subscribe, wherever it is. And come back next week for some more UFL talk. Come back tomorrow for some WrestleMania talk. And appreciate everybody who was part of the conversation tonight. For Banker Bill, it's your guy, Bully Rye, and we'll see you next time right here on Tapouts and Touchdowns.